Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com. You're probably already there. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song with his wife, Sarah, that you just heard. He's going to sing his version of the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Patrick Brady is going to fix this audio, and Vilmos works on JackieCation.com, the website. There are many ways to support the show. The Amazon link is one. You can use an Amazon link from JackieCation.com or DorkForest.com to go to Amazon. You order like normal, and it supports the show. There is a straight-up donation button, PayPal or Venmo, to this email address that is mine, Jackie at JackieCation.com, where you can just donate to the show if you like the show a lot. I think PayPal has figured out a way to do a monthly. If you want to go monthly, please do. Other ways to support the show if you want to is you can buy merch. There's Dork Forest t-shirts, and all the shirts are union made here in America, so they run a little big. Union Bayside, so if you want to look up their size chart. And then the other merch is my stand-up merch. On JackieCation.com, you can watch me do stand-up, you can look at my schedule, and the stand-up merch, a couple of different t-shirts, couple of different enamel pins, and all of my CDs and my DVD. If you want to live stream my DVD, it's over there at comedyfilmnerds.com. They have a live streaming capability, or you can get a hard copy of the DVD on my website. Oh, there are premium episodes at Bandcamp. TheDorkForest.bandcamp.com has probably 10 episodes that were done live. They cost me a couple of bucks to make, so I charge you a couple of bucks. If you've run out of regular episodes, go over to TheDorkForest.bandcamp.com and get some more. Other than that, I say this. Let's get into the show. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my living room with Brian Jacobowitz.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. It's so nice to be here.
There you go. We're doing it. We know each other from stand-up comedy.
Yes.
And it's at Brian Jacobowitz on all the things, right?
All
Instagram,
the things.
Twitter, probably. Is there a Brian Jacobowitz .com?
There is not a website currently, but mm-hmm. I do the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of it.
All the things. Yeah. And then you are also, you work at a game store.
I do.
That's your day job, which means that you and Andy Ashcraft have so much to talk about.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
And me. And,
yeah.
And I like a game, but yeah. Nobody likes it of the two of us. I'm yeah. more, yeah.
Yeah. I believe Andy and I were actually talking. You were like, guys, we got a podcast to do.
Yeah, we're gonna knock this out. I got another one about dictators right after you.
Oh, perfect.
So, but we're talking about a fictional dictator and Creepy Cthulhu.
Yes.
You wanted a dork. I've done a couple. Mm-hmm. I still don't get it.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. What the fuck?
So
it's that guy.
So Cthulhu mythos comes from H.P. Lovecraft, writer from early 1900, 1910s, 1920s. And the thing that's interesting about him, so I guess I should first go over the fact that, like, with Cthulhu mythos is from the namesake of his story, The Call of Cthulhu.
Okay.
And
it was a short story called The Call of Cthulhu.
Correct, yeah.
I have tried to read it. Mm-hmm. It has not worked out for me.
No, it usually doesn't. It's very slow. He's a very slow writer because back in those times, they actually paid authors by the page.
Oh, the word.
Or the word. So the more that they draw it out.
Right. And go forth.
Right. So he's a very wordy, very, like, honestly, I'm not really much of a reader from the page. I do a lot of audio.
Yeah.
So I recommend if you want to do any of the Lovecraft stories,
to
listen to them.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Especially because it's really easy to tune out and then come back and be like, oh, okay, well, nothing important happened. You know?
He was still describing that couch.
Right. Exactly. So, So Call of Cthulhu is kind of one of the main stories. And I think it's probably one of the more popular ones because Cthulhu is one of the few gods from his stories that's actually described. They don't actually give details. So that's why I think Cthulhu is the most popular, because basically what happens in the story is they kind of this guy gets found on this ship. The ship comes
back. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Spoiler alert on the 90-year-old short stories.
Exactly.
you know, some guy is upset somewhere.
No, mostly everybody else knows what this is.
Exactly. And like I said, it's
So he gets shipwrecked.
The ship comes back to, it's usually like New England is usually like kind of the setting. The ship comes back and the people find this guy, and this guy is like insane.
Right.
Insanity, a big theme in the Cthulhu mythos.
Right.
So they find this guy. This guy is like holding onto this like little statuette. He's insane. The statue is of this little like squid-faced monster.
Okay.
Which also goes to the whole like, you actually get a little description of what Cthulhu looks like.
Right.
So they find this guy, and they find his journal, and I'm also glossing over all the boring details and stuff.
Please
that,
do.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no reason to go into detail about what the whaling ship looked like in Moby Dick.
Right, absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah, people are listening going like, I can't wait for the dictators. So they find this, this one guy in particular just is kind of interested. He's like, I found this journal. I want to go see what this guy sees. So he goes back on the ship and finds the island, and then like Cthulhu emerges, and of course this guy's like a skyscraper, like god-like creature that and that's kind of the whole story. But if you're paying by the word,
right.
What I just described, I would have gotten, you know, like a few bucks. And
right, exactly.
But nobody can, you know, live off of that.
Right. You would have been shoveling sand on the side.
Exactly.
But H.P. Lovecraft had racism to espouse.
Absolutely.
So he makes Cthulhu, the squid monster.
Right.
And then the Call of Cthulhu, he's been called. Yeah. He's not been called for any good reason.
No.
And he makes everybody crazy.
Right.
And he murders things.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And one thing that's also really interesting about Cthulhu, because Cthulhu is one of those creatures where like everybody kind of knows what he is.
Yeah.
But or they know about him. But the thing is that in the Cthulhu mythos, the creatures are actually aliens. So, like, some people are like, oh, are they demons? Are they just monsters? The creatures in the Cthulhu mythos are actually aliens. There's, like,
his pantheon? The pantheon that H.P. Lovecraft made, were aliens?
Yeah, that's like, the common theme of the whole mythos.
He thinks that there are aliens that have come to Earth, and they're all kind of crazy looking.
Right.
And they become giant and murder.
Right.
Okay, now, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I only thought that they were monsters. I assume that they come from the ocean.
Right. Right. Because that's the thing about the monsters in the Cthulhu mythos is that a lot of times it's like, well, what are they supposed to be? What are their origins? Especially because there's a lot of, like, cult activity. So sometimes, and especially later on, there are certain authors who kind of add, it almost is like a religion where they worship. So sometimes you think like, well, are they demons? You know, are they, you know, you get that.
Because there's the Necronomicon.
Right. The Necronomicon.
Was that in the Call of Cthulhu?
It is actually it's not in Call of Cthulhu, but the Necronomicon is created by H.P. Lovecraft. There is a short story called the Necronomicon that he wrote. And the Necronomicon is like an Easter egg that you get in a lot of the stories.
Okay.
It's there's the Necronomicon. And then the people who have read it are like, ooh, look, it's kind of like, you know, like when you watch the comic book movies and you're like, oh, they mentioned that person. I know who they are because I read comics.
Right, but that is a deep dive into whatever. But so the Necronomicon is a different short story.
Correct.
The Call of Cthulhu, one short story. The Necronomicon in the same universe?
Well,
with the same pantheon of gods?
Well, and that's but it was something that actually wasn't designed by H.P. Lovecraft or wasn't his intention to create this whole world.
Because
for him, when he wrote all the stories, it was kind of like he wrote the stories and these different things he was kind of pulling out where like as he would write other things, he'd be like, oh, cool. If I read this other thing, I would get it.
Yeah.
But it was actually other authors who existed around that time. There's like 7 or 8 different guys who Lovecraft worked with, and they all kind of borrowed each other's ideas, almost as kind of like a cross promotion thing.
Okay.
Including I think is Robert E. Howard. I think it is the creator of Conan the Barbarian.
Oh,
yeah, he created the character Conan the Barbarian, and in the early ones,
they're like word for hire inklings,
right?
It's like a less glamorous inkling, but only because they're not British,
exactly.
Because they too were sitting around getting drunk and helping each other with their works,
right? Because that's what you did back then,
right?
You would go, you would get drunk with your friends, and you know
that I think is still happening.
It still is happening, I'm sure. Not so much with, well, maybe with authors too. I don't know.
Who knows?
But
anyway, yeah. Yes. So okay. So Ron Howard.
Yeah.
So Ron Howard,
who
wrote Conan the Barbarian.
Yes.
And was Conan O'Brien's dad.
Yeah. Well, anyway. You know, Andy Griffith. You know, was only paying so many bills. You know. But yeah, Robert E. Howard. So in the very early, I guess, stages of like the Conan the Barbarian stories, there's Cthulhu mythos elements in that as well.
Okay.
But then Lovecraft took characters from like these guys' stuff and included in his stuff as well. It was just this like cross promotion thing with their friends. But because of that, that's what kind of created a lot of the mythos was other authors who were like, oh, we're going to take what this guy did and we're going to kind of...
Because it had been sort of sanctioned.
Right.
So that's interesting. Sort of, it wasn't fan fiction, it was more, and not that fan fiction isn't sanctioned at this point,
sure.
But initially it was not.
Right.
And I know that authors of very popular stuff can't read fan fiction because they don't want to end up stealing stuff.
Right.
So, instead they just love that it exists is
right.
what I'm told.
Absolutely.
That's so interesting. So he dies, and mm-hmm. they all die, right?
Right, they all die.
All the sword and sorcery writers fall over in a heap, and then other people pick up the mantle.
Yeah, and it's interesting that there are certain so one of the themes that you'll find in a lot of Lovecraft stories is the kind of the hopelessness of humans, where there's this great, well, just in that this sense
who's
that like
inviting these people to the house, no one,
nobody is. Okay. That's why they all had to be friends with each other,
exactly.
You know, because they're like, well, we're not
guys.
Yeah, the part at the big parties, they were off in their own circle of
exactly.
seven. You know, so there's just that kind of thing where it's like there's greater beings out there, mm-hmm. things that don't even acknowledge that human beings are evil. Like we're like ants. To these other creatures.
Yeah.
And so that's like a big common theme. And the fact that humans can't rationalize, like they can't imagine anything at that extreme. So that's where the insanity comes into play, where it's like, it's something that our minds can't handle.
Oh, it's too big.
Right.
And so we go mad.
Right.
When we are faced with these godlike creatures.
Right. Right, right.
And what do the godlike creatures think about it? Do they think about it at all?
They don't really acknowledge it at all. Like even in like Call of Cthulhu, like, there's so often things that come up where there's no interaction usually between the gods and the humans. Like, it's just like we – because with Cthulhu, the origin of Cthulhu, which I think came out a lot later
– yeah.
Was
– but it was retconned, essentially.
It was retconned, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which stands for retroactively –
continuity, yeah,
jammed into the plot.
Yes,
okay,
yeah. They, you know, like Donald Blake, you know, they retconned, you know,
okay.
these things, where they said that like Cthulhu, before people even existed on Earth, Cthulhu came to Earth and like was trying to conquer, you know, what was the world, and the other, because all these aliens are fighting with each other.
Right.
So they all fight each other, and I guess Cthulhu's like sent into this like slumber underneath the water.
Oh, okay.
And then.
So he has been banished to Earth by the space people.
Right.
And they're like, why don't you think about what you did?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
You're on timeout. You go to this big rock.
And it's full of ants.
Right.
Won't even matter.
Right. And what a great thing though. Like go over there and you just sleep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's such a good thing, but for Cthulhu, not so great. And
wow.
Right.
Thus speaks a guy who obviously needs a nap.
Yes.
Brian.
Yes. Yes. A lot of things cut into my sitting around time.
Exactly. That old.
Yes.
But So he's been banished here, and so
yeah.
the Call of Cthulhu is some banana head mm-hmm. who's accidentally awakened.
Right. He's like gone into his room and wasn't quiet enough, and Cthulhu wakes up and is pissed off. But that's the other thing too, is that like, you know, you would think like the story we could do, like, oh, he wakes up, does he go and just like destroy the rest of the world? But that's something you don't get. It's literally like this guy encounters Cthulhu, this guy goes insane, and that's kind of the end of the story.
Right, because much like the pantheon and the gods, mm-hmm. Humans are only interested in themselves.
Right.
So the story is all about, oh, you saw a thing that drove you nuts, and then mm-hmm. what did you do to the other people around you? Is that
right.
what the story is?
Essentially, or it just kind of ends with this guy going insane. Like sometimes there's no resolution to like, you know,
oh.
you're left thinking like, well, what happened? You know, what happened to this guy? Or like in this case in Call of Cthulhu, it's like, okay, he's awake. Does he now go and attack civilization? You know,
right.
Like, you don't know. You don't know what happens. He keeps you thinking.
Uh-huh.
But there are like other stories where and another common theme too with the Cthulhu mythos, the H.P. Lovecraft stories, is that the narrator, the character who's, because it's a lot of his stories are not usually from an omniscient perspective. It's usually like a first person, I'm the person who's describing what's going on, and usually that person's the one who goes insane,
right?
But they give very little description of who that person is. They don't say a lot of times the character
doesn't look in the mirror at all,
or if he does, he doesn't describe what he's like. Like there's another good one that I would recommend that's a little. Or rather, is not as slow.
Yeah,
is like a story called Shadows Over Innsmouth.
Okay,
and so in this
I've heard
one,
of that one too. Yeah,
that like Call of Cthulhu, Shadows Over Innsmouth, the Dunwich Horror.
Okay,
The King in Yellow. There's like some that are like these are kind of like the big ones that are more popular among
the mythos. And are referenced in canon, no doubt, more than anything else.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So like Shadows Over Innsmouth, the narrator, because this is a great example of one where it's like, here's the narrator. The narrator is the first person perspective, and it's really all follows around him, but you never really get an idea of what he looks like, who he is. All you know is that this guy is, I think, if I'm getting it right, you know, these 100-year-old stories, you know, sometimes they, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you've read them, and then you've been co-opted into telling the next story, too, to some extent, right?
Right.
I mean, because I know there's a good friend of Annie's, a guy named Aaron Vanek, runs a lot of LARPs and live-action role-playing games.
Yeah.
And he's been doing Cthulhu movies, H.P. Lovecraft movies for decades. And he also has done a lot of Lovecraftian LARPing.
Yes.
So there's, everyone's constantly adding to the to the canon. Who's keeping track? Anyone keep a track, or is it just whatever?
Well, a lot of it's open domain. Almost all the stories. So like if you, because there's a role-playing game called Call of Cthulhu, which I...
Tabletop dice.
Tabletop dice.
Pen and paper.
Yeah, pen and paper. Not so much with models.
Okay.
Because it's very abstract. It's not as much of like an object. Like, there's not really as many.
The models would drive you mad.
Right. Right. That's the tagline for this episode. Or if they decide to make Call of Cthulhu, Call of Cthulhu models. Chaosium is the company that prints.
Chaosium. Good for them.
Yeah. No, they're winning at this point.
Yeah, that's it. That's a good one.
But they are doing, they print the Call of Cthulhu role playing game.
Okay.
And there are other variations.
And they don't have to do anything with the estate, or there is no estate because H.P. Lovecraft died alone.
Yes.
Poor.
Yeah.
Poor and alone because he was mad.
Right. He was writing these boring stories and this super racist, xenophobic guy.
The stuff that I've read of his, he feels like a real solo dude.
Yes.
And so he may not. But it's interesting. And so now it's all in the public domain.
My understanding,
So Call of Cthulhu, the board game, is possible because there's nothing to prove.
Right.
Okay.
And for me, what got me into the Cthulhu mythos and H.P. Lovecraft at all was the board games.
Oh, you came from the other side.
I came from the other side where I was. So many years ago, I knew somebody who brought out this game called Arkham Horror. And if
Batman,
you're not familiar.
Right.
No, so Arkham Asylum that's in Batman is actually taken from Arkham from H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Because the town, the fictional town of Arkham, Massachusetts, it was one of the main things of H.P. Lovecraft. It was a primary setting.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, and Batman had used Arkham as a part of that
later on.
But so Arkham Horror was a board game created by Fantasy Flight.
Okay.
And what was so interesting to me, especially coming from the back end of it, is that this game, you are trying to defeat this elder god. You're trying to, there's little portals that open up in your town. And you're trying to seal the portal, as you do. You're trying to seal the portals. And
caulking gun.
Right, exactly. And it's all, old-timey. It all takes place, in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And there were characters. You get, different character sheets, and the characters are already created. It's not it's not, in this sense, it's not like a role-playing game where you create your own character. This one, there's, characters
assigned
you choose from.
Right. That you, okay.
But they would be, here's Marie Lambeau, the lounge singer, or Michael McGlenn, the gangster, so they had all. So for me, I'm seeing all these characters and I'm like, oh, these are based on books. So if I read these stories, it has these characters in them.
Okay.
And I was wrong.
Because you liked, oh, really?
Right. Yeah. Because I was like, oh, cool. I like these, here's my point
of
reference.
I like this game.
Right. And it's like, oh, if I go back, I can read maybe the story. And it's like, no, the Fantasy Flight made up these characters.
Because they could.
Because they can.
What is the, I have played. No, the crazy thing about this is, mm-hmm. and not no nobody's surprised to find out that I've forgotten. Mm-hmm. I have played Arkham Horror.
Okay,
and it was, I believe, pretty spooky.
It is.
There is some tension.
Yes.
In the game Arkham Horror.
There is, and I know you've told me on different occasions that you're not all about the scary.
I don't enjoy tension.
Yeah.
We're all living day to day, and
right.
We're in a bath of tension.
Yeah.
I would like to know how it's all going to work out.
Right. Absolutely. I've been told if it's like apples to apples or something, you're there. You're the first one there.
Completely there. Yeah. Bring your own book. I'm
right.
doing it.
Yes.
It's but the thing is I have read, like, there's that white zombie. White Winter, the Winter Zombie.
It's a board game?
Yeah, it's a board game.
Oh, Dead of Winter?
That's it.
Yes,
Dead of Winter. Dead of Winter.
Yeah.
You're in, and that has a great deal of tension.
Yes.
Because you're trying to get from room to room to room or
right.
or through the woods to somewhere safe where there's more food.
Right.
And
one of the people in the game might potentially be the traitor, sabotaging
right.
the group.
I have no it. It's very hard to get me to play a traitor yeah. game.
Yes.
Where there's, you know, though I did enjoy that werewolf game one time, which I
yes.
think we played as Mafia.
Yeah.
Or we played, I think we played, I don't know, whatever, yeah. everybody closes their eyes.
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, werewolf is good. A lot of people are really into Secret Hitler, which is
right,
kind of the
right.
same thing. And I always say, I'm like, of all the games where you masquerade as Hitler, that's the most popular.
That's the most,
you know?
Fun game.
Yeah, that's the most fun one. but my, under, like, but they're big party games. You know,
yeah.
usually that's when you're playing like 8 to 16.
Right, you
know,
need
a
bunch
people.
Of, a game for a lot of people. Now,
right.
Arkham Horror is only probably 4 or 5 people, right?
Well, Arkham, so there's different Arkham games. The Arkham Horror line of games actually has about 5 or 6 different games in the series.
Okay.
Arkham Horror, I think, is one where you can play with 8. And all these games
oh, wow.
are cooperative, too, which...
except for the traitor.
Except for the traitor. But this one doesn't have a traitor element. So, like, Dead of Winter has the traitor mechanic, but none of the Arkham games do.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, which is really good. And I
though you can go mad in it, if I remember
you,
correctly.
You definitely can. Yes. All the Arkham
Isn't
games do have the same thing where there's sanity and stamina.
Right. There's
like
a,
health
a
and madness.
Meter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you go insane, you know, depending on the game, there's one of the games, Mansions of Madness,
mm-hmm.
which do you guys ever play Descent? Where it's like it's almost like a D&D style, but it's like a board game version of it. Where
I think we have it.
Okay.
I don't know that I've played it.
Well, so. Mansions of Madness kind of plays in a similar way, where and there's an app that you can play with it now because
oh,
there's always
nice.
An app.
There's always an app. Now there's the new app thing.
Right. So with this one, Mansions of Madness, also very tense. All of them are pretty tense. It'll say, here's the story, here's what's going on, and here's your characters, and you start out. The app will tell you, like, here's a tile of the house that you start on. And then it'll tell you, like, you can go through this door. And as you go through the door, the app will say, like, well, these are the tiles that are now here.
And and you add to the – I
right.
just played one. Just
yeah.
It was a Lord of the Rings one.
Yeah.
That has an app that tells you what happens and if there's more orcs sitting over in that
right.
the woods that you just walked into.
Right, 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 right. Because there's always more orcs.
There's always
more orcs.
They're like rabbits.
Right.
And
exactly. I don't know. That's Saruman. He's cranking them out.
Either that or the love story of orcs. The thing
right.
that has never been written.
Right. See, that's the romance novel that needs to get written.
Yeah. That actually is very funny.
Yeah. And what's cool about this, too, I think all these app games are probably the same, but I know with the Mansions of Madness, the app will randomize, like
yeah.
if you play the same scenario over and over again, it'll try and give you like different rooms or different things
yeah.
that you set up in. But all very tense, all kind of with the same, like, here's this thing that's, some bad thing is happening and you need to resolve it in some way.
Right.
And with Mansions of Madness, and now they have the Arkham Horror card game. It's what a part of the Living card game series.
Okay.
Where so you know how, like, you have a game like Magic the Gathering,
yes.
where it's collectible cards. You
mm-hmm.
buy packs and it's random cards and you burn your money and,
yeah.
and you know, and maybe the
And then
the,
you get that rare.
Right. Maybe the pack gods will give you something good if you sacrifice enough money. With Living card games, they're not like that. With that, you buy the box. It gives you every card, all the cards that you need.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's
it
the marketing
of it. It
could
still be a deck builder game.
Right.
But it's not. You have all the cards.
Correct. Yeah. There's no collectability to
right.
it.
Right. And if they have an expansion, you get all those cards.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So with that, so they have the Arkham Horror version where it's just the card game and you build your own. So this is the cool part about it, though, with Living card games is it's cooperative. You build your own deck. And
okay.
you're like, this is my investigator. And every turn we have like our hand of cards. And it's like, I'm going to play this weapon so I can go and fight this monster. Or I'm going to play this card to help, you know, get through this
right,
scenario.
Right.
It's a very, very cool. All the Arkham Files games are all really cool. They're all related to where the same characters are in all of them.
Oh, so, is the gangster and the lounge singer in all of them?
They're all in all. I mean, as expansions come out, they'll add more and more characters. Right. But they're all in it. So if you're like, I love playing this character in Arkham Horror, that character then exists in the card game and in Elder Tor and all that stuff. So there's I think, because there's Arkham Horror, which is the town of Arkham you explore. There's Eldritch Horror, which is you explore the world. So you're going like continent to continent. And,
oh, okay.
And, you know,
like
that.
Like a Risk kind of thing?
Kind of.
But in the way that there's a map.
Right. Yes,
not that
yes.
there's armies.
Right. You're looking at like the map and there will be like locations. Same thing where like portals open, but in the continents and you're going to resolve those issues. Because the Cthulhu mythos never stops. It's always going.
No, that is
and,
a non. That yeah. is a. That just keeps going.
Yep.
And there are. Did he create. Did. The original seven create other gods besides Cthulhu?
There are gods that are created by other writers that are a part of the mythos. So like I mentioned the King in Yellow.
Yeah.
King in Yellow is a really popular story that's not written by H.P. Lovecraft. It's written by John W. Chambers, something W. Chambers.
Okay.
Chambers. But he writes the King in Yellow. And so the King in Yellow is interesting because it's – If you listen to it on audio, it was like 5 hours long.
Oh wow!
So
a short story that was 5 hours long.
Well, that's the thing. It's like vignettes, so it's like a lot of different short stories together. But what's interesting about it is that so the King in Yellow is this play that apparently if you watch the play, you go insane.
Okay.
So that you know more insanity.
Right. The and, Ring.
Right.
Or something. Or,
exactly.
Yeah.
And there's constant mentions of Carcosa, which is like the other dimension that takes place in the King in Yellow.
Okay.
And this elder god named Hastur.
Okay.
So Hastur is the King
H-A-S-T-U-R?
In Yellow. H-A-S-T-U-R. Hastur.
He has been referred to in other things that
yes.
I have read.
Yes. And he...
I think mostly comic books.
But probably.
And maybe Conan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all related. It's all connected.
Yeah.
The 7 degrees of insanity. So Hastur and King in Yellow. So people will come to me too, like True Detective. There's a show, True Detective.
Okay.
And something you and I have in common. I don't watch stuff.
Okay.
You know, people. You know, people. People are like, "Oh, are you watching this thing?" I'm like, "Sure, I'm not.
Sure, I'm not. Yeah, I'm sure it's incredibly well done.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll catch something. But
right.
I'm a big rerun person. You know,
right.
I'll just put stuff. I'm a big background person.
Background
you know?
Television yeah. is nice.
Yeah. Just like I'm on my phone.
Network,
I'm on my computer.
Travel Network.
Right.
Even the Weather Channel.
Yeah.
And
Hastur
fine.
Pops up so infrequently on those three channels. You know,
right?
unless the Great British Bake Off decides to do like an H.P. Lovecraft themed episode,
right? You know? And sometimes the British Bake Off will have a nerd baker who
that's
will want to build a Cthulhu cake.
Yeah,
yeah.
With it being British, I'm sure there's a lot of like Hogwarts, you know,
oh,
castle
yeah.
cakes.
Possibly,
you know,
you
I'm
don't
sure
know.
There is.
It could happen.
Yeah, but again, not watching it. So
still
you know,
not watching.
Still
it.
Not watching it. So King in Yellow. It's like three or. It's like 3 to 5 different stories. But what's interesting about it is that so the King in Yellow is this play that drives people insane. The vignettes are not actually revolved around the King in Yellow at all, but they come up like just kind of matter of factly mentioned in the
like
vignettes.
Like some sort of adjacent,
right?
They're like just like, oh, you remember Jim?
Yeah,
he went and saw the King in Yellow. Anyway, did you want to get lunch?
Right. That's almost exactly what happens in one of them, where it's literally like, oh yeah. So all these different things are going on, and at some point I went out and checked out the King in Yellow, and by the end of it, I'm insane, and it was just bad on me. I shouldn't have gone and seen it. I don't know which friend took me to see it, but
right.
I'm insane now.
Someone defined insanity. They were like, there's a difference between crazy and insane, because crazy, you can't exist in the world.
Right.
You've cashed in your chips.
Yeah.
Insane just means that you're not all there. So
yeah.
Parts of you are still there.
Right.
Right? Much like a sanity meter
right.
in that game.
Yes.
It's like you have a pie. You've cut it into 8 pieces.
Yep.
If someone takes a piece of pie, you right. still have most of a pie.
Right.
You're mostly sane.
Right.
But part of you is insane.
Right. It's definitely that, especially in a cooperative game setting where it's like, well, maybe we just trust this guy a little less. Like that's, you know, kind of the measurement at that point.
Right, right.
And
I like in that because you're supposed to role play that too. When as you
right
as you go more insane in those board games, you're supposed to take that into account when you look at your cards or
right,
when
right,
you
right.
play your turn.
Yeah, and that is one thing that they don't represent super well in a lot of them. In in Mansions of Madness, it's represented the best because if you lose all of your sanity in Mansions of Madness, you will gain the insanity card where you're still in the game, but it'll say like, your mission now is to burn down the house. Like, you are a pyromaniac now, or you're a kleptomaniac. If you end your turn in a space with another player, you might steal something from that person.
Wow.
You know, or like, it's the most represented in most of the other games. Sanity is just a second, like, you know, resource where it's like, oh, I'm out of it now. So, like, I'm back at the start or something like that.
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
So Mansions of Madness is one of the ones that's kind of the best.
That encourages some actual kind of role playing.
Right, right,
which is super fun. It makes it more fun. Yeah.
So Call of Cthulhu, the role-playing game, is great because there's a, you know, in the role-playing setting, obviously, that's going to be the most where you get the actual story, and the players get to develop their own characters. So, so what I've done, I have a group I play with where I'm the dungeon master of
that
group.
Oh, you're the GM of that
one? I'm the GM. The lore keeper, actually, is what they call it in the rule book.
Yes.
They have a different name. It's all open domain. Lore keeper.
Okay.
I still say DM because that's just, or GM or whatever. You know, that's what where I come from. I come from a Dungeons and Dragons background.
Brian Jacobitz comes from a Dungeons and Dragons background.
Exactly.
Guys. Not a lot of people saying that in the world, but here on the Dork Forest, it comes up. My ad. I'm about to do an ad. Rangers, it's me, Jackie Cation, talking to you about a great deodorant. That's right. You remember Native Deodorant. NativeDeodorant.com, and you use the promo code FOREST this time, not dork, but FOREST. Live by a code, you guys, and get 20% off your first purchase. The great thing about Native Deodorant is that it's formulated without aluminum. I hate aluminum in deodorant. I really do. It's been linked to things, and they don't make it with aluminum, so I'm psyched about it. It's filled with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, which is antimicrobial, shea butter, which is a moisturizer and an emollient, and tapioca starch, which absorbs wetness. There's no animal testing. There's free shipping and returns in the United States. You should know that they have over 8,000 five-star reviews. Check us out. They were on The Tonight Show, Elle Magazine, Pop Sugar, Refinery 29, and The Dork Forest. That's right. Less is more with Native. They have fewer, simpler ingredients, so you know everything that's in their deodorant. It's worth it. I got the lavender and rose, and it smells good, and it works. It is a deodorant and a bit of an antiperspirant, which I enjoy. The classic deodorant scents include coconut and vanilla, their most popular scent, lavender and rose, I got that, cucumber and mint, and eucalyptus and mint. Go to nativedeodorant.com and use the promo code FOREST during checkout and get 20% off your first purchase. All right, let's get back into the show. Let me just tell people that it is Brian. I spelled it brain. That's not how you spell it.
No.
Brian Jacobitz.
Yes. Jacobitz.
Jacobitz is would help. Yeah. But I keep wanting to say the word Jacob.
Yes.
Jacobitz.
Yeah.
And it's just your name
it's
on Twitter and everything.
On all the socials.
On all the socials, which is Jacobitz.
Yes. And Brian with an I.
And Brian with an I, not a Y.
Yes.
And you host a show every month, the first Saturday?
Yes, the first Saturday of every month.
At Paper Heroes, which happens to be a board game store.
Yes.
Here in the Van Nuys Valley Village, Sherman Oaks area.
Yes.
So people go to that too because it's actually really nice. And there's a really nice diner right next door.
Yes, there is.
Nat's Early Bite.
Yes.
So they don't want, by the way, Early Bite. They don't want your dinner service. They close at 2.
They do not. Yes, they close early. And I recommend their breakfast. I've had the lunch. Breakfast is better.
The breakfast is better.
Yes.
Magnolia Grill, the lunch is better.
Yes.
Weirdly enough, the breakfast burrito is actually really good at Magnolia Grill. Wow, I've digressed.
Yes.
Let's get back into it.
Well, I'm also really into food. If I come back again, we'll do food.
We'll do food that time.
Yeah, we'll do another food. So I DM a Call of Cthulhu group, and what I did with this group is the character or the players all develop their own characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, well, I'm going to create a twist for all of your characters, something that you as a player don't know about your character.
You're the best GM ever.
Right.
Yay.
Yeah. So I will
give
you
the work in.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing about that game. So I've never DM'd like Dungeons and Dragons. I play in many groups, you know, over the years, but I've never been the DM. But when I first started DMing Call of Cthulhu, people would tell me, they're like, oh, that's really ambitious. That's one of like the harder like role-playing games to DM.
Oh.
Because the way that the book is set up is they're like, here's you know, NPCs, non-player characters, you know, here's these people that, you know, you might interact with. Here's the setting. Here's what's happened. Now you fill in the rest. You know, with D&D modules, typically it'll lay out where it's like, here's the history of what's going on. Like, it'll give you almost too much.
There's 30 books.
Right. Yeah. There's too much information about everything to where it's like, you can skip over all this if you want to, but here it is if you need it.
Right.
Right. Call of Cthulhu is the opposite, where it's like, here's like this.
You get one book?
Right. Here's like, here's this one thing. It, there will be an adventure where it's like, here's 5 pages of the adventure. Here's like what's happening. And now it's up to you to kind of fill in the rest. So as a DM, especially if you want to be a storyteller, it's one of the better ones to DM.
Okay.
So with this one, but I added the twist to it. The twist is not normally a part of the game mechanics, but I wanted to add it.
You wanted to add, so is this sort of like, is the twist specific to each character?
Yes.
Like sort of, here's your secret,
right.
here's your object, here's your problem.
Right. But what's fun about it is that the player themselves doesn't know what their own twist is.
Oh, weird.
But the other two players know what their twist is. So like everyone's in on like the secret for each other.
Okay.
So one of the characters, they might not listen to the podcast, so it might not be a big spoiler for them, And one of them died, they already know what their spoiler was or what their twist was. My friend created a character where he's like, I'm going to be an author. It was a woman author who, and that was kind of her tie to the Cthulhu mythos because there's a lot of parallels with like, I'm a writer, I'm an artist, I have visions, all that type of stuff, because that's just how it works. And he's like, I'm this woman, I'm this like socialite woman that invites all these people to my house, all that stuff, and men constantly are you know hitting on me, but she's married to this man, and the man was really jealous and leaves her and all this stuff. So the twist for his character was that he is actually the husband who is so grief stricken that he believes that he is his wife.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So that was the twist to his character. So he was actually a man, the husband, he was a man who believed that he was his wife and thought he was a woman. And
because
and
he lost his wife in some tragic, tragic way.
Right.
So, super tragic, but he went mad.
Right.
And then he thought that he was his own wife.
Right. Exactly.
And so as the socialite crazy lady that he thinks he is, is he still in, are they still inviting people to the house?
Well, at this point, his character is kind of roped into the investigation part of it it's like, okay, well now
they're on an adventure.
Now you're on the adventure.
Okay.
But it's great because the other two players realize that this is a man.
Right.
So, but it's great. So the player doesn't know.
Right.
He believes that, I'm the female author that I created. So we would be doing adventures where he's like, oh, I'm going to go and try and use my sex appeal to get past. And so things would happen. And of course it wouldn't work super well, or certain characters, it also takes place in like the 30s.
Right.
So there are certain characters where it's like they are very apprehensive to interact with this person because that's uncomfortable for them, you know, or things like that.
It was a very black and white gender world back then,
it
except
was.
For where it wasn't
right
on the sly.
Exactly.
And so, so they would sometimes in this world meet those, people who were living on the sly, I bet.
Right.
That character would get with exactly what they wanted because it all worked out.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
But that character ended up dying, as you do in Call of Cthulhu. You either die or go insane. That is one of the things about Call of Cthulhu is they'll say like at the beginning, like, might want to make like 2 or 3 characters because you might like get killed because it's real world stuff. So if you get like in a gunfight and you get shot, especially like in the 30s, where like you might just die right there, you know?
Right, because nobody, talk to me about the actual mechanics of the Call of Cthulhu. So
when you build a character, it's similar in D&D where you have like your attributes, you have like your strength and like
charisma
your charisma and all that stuff.
Intelligence and stuff like that.
They have different things that are a little different. Like in this one, they have like appearance instead of like charisma.
Okay.
They have like credit rating, which is based on like how much wealth you have.
That's kind of horribly funny.
Right, right.
Yeah.
There's willpower, which is also in D&D as well, but in willpower in this, it has to do with like your sanity and has to do with if you do come across like magic in this world, you know, that also is a part of it too. But there's always that joke where it's like, okay, you're in Call of Cthulhu, you walk into a room and you see a book, what do? Like I close the door and I burn down the building. Like I'm not gonna, and it's funny playing with people who come from a D&D background, because typically when you are wired to play D&D, mm-hmm. when you play Call of Cthulhu, you hear something like, oh, they mentioned it, I must go interact with it, or I must go touch it, I must go fight it, whatever it is.
Oh, and that's like, a D&D thing.
Well, that's a D&D thing. But in Call of Cthulhu, it's like, no, maybe I'm mentioning it to you so you stay away from it.
So you run in the other direction.
Right, right.
So what... So if you're... That's a fascinating game, though, because yeah. how do you get to... Is the point and purpose of the game to get out of the house?
it depends on the setting. So there's different scenarios. Mm-hmm. There, if you buy, they have like the player's handbook kind of thing yeah. where it has like adventures in it, and they have like their own modules and stuff for it too. But like an example of one of the scenarios that I've done that's from one of the books
yeah.
is the investigators are trying to find out what happened to these papers. This university, one of the professors dies.
Sure.
Because that's what happens. Mm-hmm. And he was authenticating like some paperwork that came from like these old Arkham, Massachusetts witch trials.
Okay.
So, of course, because of the mythos, like, we just think these are regular papers, but it ends up being like, this is actually like witchcraft or whatever. And right. this guy dies because he was...
He read them aloud.
He read them out loud or whatever, you know, which in the Call of Cthulhu universe, don't read anything out loud.
Don't read anything out loud.
If at all. Don't read. Don't read anything. Just close yeah. the door, burn down the house, and run. But in this scenario,
yes.
They're trying to investigate this guy... like he dies and they're trying to figure out what happened to this paperwork. Cause the paperwork's like really valuable. They're trying to get it to the museum, or people are like bidding on it, whatever it is. And at the same time, because of course this yes. is how it happens.
Yes.
Is there are mobsters. There are Atlantic City mobsters who are after the professor who had died because he owed their boss oh, okay. a whole bunch of money. And they think that this guy's faked his death to try and like,
get out of the bill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So of course these guys are now an adversary to the party as well.
Right. But they don't know that the papers are dangerous either. Right.
Right. And they don't even care about the papers. They're just like, we need to find this guy. We need to shake him down and get his money. We think that he's still alive and he's faking his death. So, of course, these are like muscle guys where like the party might get encountered and be like, okay, well, we're going to shake you down kind of thing.
Right. And you're like, I'm a lounge singer.
Right. It's like, yeah, I am a female author, sir. You know,
I will hit you with this umbrella.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway, so.
Because that's how it works. It's yes. it's funny because like it never seems to go that way. Because with this scenario, what's also great about this scenario with Call of Cthulhu, again going back to the whole how it's great for storytellers, is mm-hmm. that they give you a list of NPCs mm-hmm. and they say you as the DM get to decide who the culprit is. You get to decide who stole the papers or who has the papers. And here's a little blurb on like why it might be them.
Okay.
So
there's tiny little, just a sentence of backstory for each of those characters.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
But it's cool because if you run it over and over again, you could be like, oh, I changed who the culprit was. I made it where it was this person who stole the papers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of course, like they want the papers because the papers have power and all right, that stuff.
And some people just want to start a fire.
Right. Exactly. But the scenario is basically like there's just a lot of different points where it's like, you know, you have to go and figure out what happened to this paperwork. And as right. you go and explore more and more, there's just adversaries. It's a percentile system. So like in D&D, it's a D20.
Yeah.
In this one, it's the two D10s, the percentage dice and the tens dice.
Okay.
And you have – when you build your character, one of your attributes is education.
Okay.
And – based on how many points you have, you put points into a whole bunch of different skills.
Right.
And the skills, because it's real world, might just go into like, oh, this is a library use. This is my ability to like go
Dewey
through
Decimal.
Papers. Right, exactly. Yeah. This is my ability to like research books.
So interesting. And it's all about probability of success?
Typically.
Because it's percentages?
Correct. Yeah. So in this one, if you have like a 30% chance of doing this, you roll the percentile dice and you're trying to get a 30 or less. You're trying to roll under the percentage.
Okay.
And the way experience works, because like in D&D, you just go up in levels and then in the player's handbook, it'll be like, well, when you hit this level, you gain these skills or whatever
it is. Right. You can get a feat.
Right. Or you gain feats. In Call of Cthulhu, if you succeed at a skill check in your scenario, you put a check mark next to that skill, and at the end, you roll to try and enhance that skill. So the more you succeed with a skill, the better you get at using it.
That's
So it's really
it has
nice.
More real world kind of vibe to it,
right? And for me,
with
like
monsters,
right? Exactly, real world also a little bit of monsters in there too. But I like it. I mean, I love D&D as well, but with D&D, you know. a lot of it kind of boils down to sometimes like, well, we have to fight and kill this thing. Like that's right. kind of sometimes the adversary is like, well, we have to fight and just destroy what is in front of us.
I was just playing a D&D game and mm-hmm. Andy introduced a red dragon into yep. the thing and the wrong person mm-hmm. had initiative.
Yeah.
And so that person tried to hit it.
Yes.
And if our cleric had initiative, mm-hmm. he would have talked to it. And right. that's what Andy, who is the DM,
yes.
Had planned for. He was like, who would try to fight a red dragon? It was right. a colossus red dragon.
Yeah.
So he's like, I know that you guys are 17th, 18th level,
right.
but that's a red dragon.
Right.
And we ended up killing the red dragon.
Yeah.
It took 7 hours of gameplay.
Yep.
And but it's just a bit of a crapshoot whoever right. gets initiative, because sometimes he does want you, you know, the DM does want you to try to talk to it.
Sure.
We were the Goblin King. Our right. cleric was talking to the Goblin King, mm-hmm. kept rolling 20s.
Yeah.
It turns out the Goblin King owed him a favor by the end yeah. of this this it's interaction.
Like, you never know what'll happen if you just talk to it.
Exactly. You know? He might as well just try talking to him first.
Right.
And then he takes a swipe. Yeah. All right, you get a...
Like, all right, well, we'll see.
You could take one hit.
Sure.
Probably.
Sure. I mean, as much as role-playing goes into it, sometimes the D20 will just be against you and be like, well, we wanted to talk to him, and he wasn't having any
of it. He wasn't having any of it.
He didn't want to do it. And there are high fantasy role-playing games like D&D. Pathfinder mm-hmm. is another one, which is like the 3.5 version of D&D.
Right. I've played Pathfinder. I played 3.5 mm. Pathfinder and 5th edition.
Yes.
And then I've played Champions.
Okay.
Which is a tabletop. Essentially, it seems to be an Excel spreadsheet that I don't want to play.
Oh, yeah.
The great thing about Champions mm-hmm. is you get to roll like 30 dice at a time.
Oh, that is pretty nice.
That is fun.
Yeah.
That's good times. The more dice you get to roll, the more fun, because then sure. you're like, I just hit you for 75 points.
Right.
And they're like, oh, well, he has 600.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, I've made a dent.
Right.
And
it's so funny, too, the way role-playing works, where it's like, ooh, just bigger numbers. That's all I want. I just want big numbers.
Right. It's what Jimmy Pardo calls fantasy football, fantasy baseball. He calls it fantasy accounting.
Right.
And which is kind of what it is.
Absolutely.
With a nice story told around it. So this is your first time your game running the game,
yes.
being the game master.
Yeah.
How long has this game been going on?
Well, the way
How
that
often
the
do you meet?
Well, we haven't we've kind of been on a break from doing the scenarios, just because, you know, like the issue with all role playing games, it's always time conflicts are always the biggest.
Right, you got to figure out a time to all gather in one room.
Right, absolutely. But the way that the Call of Cthulhu is set up is that a lot of the scenarios are just kind of like one shots.
Yeah.
As opposed to like D&D, where it's like a campaign,
right?
You know.
Oh, okay. So they're
yeah. So with this, it's more one shots, and I've done it because there's the experience system in it. It's easy enough to tie the scenarios together if you need to, because it's like, well, you're an investigator, and this
now
guy
you're
now
a team.
Is, yeah, now you're doing this, you know. now you guys are officially the Ghostbusters, and they hired you to go over here,
right?
But I've probably played with them on and off for maybe a year or two.
Okay.
You know? So it's still kind of newer. Yeah, maybe a few years.
And if you're doing Monster of the Week kind of of episodes, it is then episodic.
Yes.
So you gather, there's three players and yourself.
Right.
And do you play for 2 or 3 hours? Do you play all day?
Typically, if we're going to play, it would probably be like maybe a 3 to 5 hour session.
Right. You just – because you're not doing it that often. You might run the whole game on one day. Because I know like Brian Posehn will play D&D, but he'll play for an hour once a week.
Right.
And you're like, well, how far do you get? And he's like, about 12 feet.
Right.
And so if you – but if you play for 3 to 5 hours
– Sure.
You can actually – have a big battle. You can have way too much political talk for me.
Oh, absolutely.
And
No, there's definitely
strategy.
Strategy, but as I'm sure you've seen too, a lot of overthinking.
Sure.
Know, a lot of like, oh well, they mentioned this, and you know, so now I don't want to go talk, or just people just deciding as a group, like, well, what should we go do?
Right.
You know? Like, so there's a lot of that, especially because with all the role playing games are kind of similar in the sense that. you're usually given alternatives. You're usually given like different paths you can go down. With Call of Cthulhu, I think it's just like, because you're a regular person, it's like, well, if we commit to doing this, we're putting ourselves in, you know, a little bit more, you know, danger than maybe in D&D, where it's like, well, if we go this way, we might have to fight, you know, 12 bandits. And that wasn't what we were supposed to do first, but we fought 12 bandits and we're alive and now we'll go kill this other thing. Which is, because I brought up Pathfinder, is that Pathfinder has like a Cthulhu book, like a module where it's like, oh, you can play as like Pathfinder characters in the Cthulhu universe.
Oh, wow.
The thing that I don't like about that, though, is that, you know, the Cthulhu universe is about, you know, being afraid. It's about the atmosphere, about being regular people.
Right.
So when you're playing high fantasy characters, if you're a wizard that can fireball dragons, then what difference does it make if you fight Cthulhu?
Right. Like, he's just a bigger dragon.
Right.
Yeah, he's just another big monster that you have to figure out how to disintegrate.
Right. So it's just one of those where it's like, oh, you could fight a dragon, or you could fight a beholder, you could fight these other things. It's like, oh, well, like fighting Cthulhu, like there's nothing, you know, scary about that.
With Call of Cthulhu, there aren't any characters. There's no action figure. Or there's no
they don't make like miniatures for the game like with
so there's no map.
Correct. Yeah, like for me, like a lot of times in the book they might say like if you're in this town, here's kind of like a like loose map of like what the town looks like.
Right. But it's back very to the future. Here's town square.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's very abstract. It's very much like, you know, this is where you go. That like I had one where so I mentioned the scenario where they were trying to find these this paperwork. One of the options of one of the character options that you could pick to be the culprit is one of the college students who is a Satanist.
Okay.
He doesn't really know much about the Cthulhu mythos, but he is a Satanist and he does express interest in these papers because of witchcraft. But I didn't make him the bad guy in this. I mean, he's a Satanist, so I mean, I guess by default he's kind of a bad guy, but I didn't make him the main bad guy.
He could be a good Satanist.
I guess he could be a good Satanist. That's true. I'm sorry, Satanists who are listening.
Everything I've heard about Satan has been pretty negative.
Right. But that's true. I am being unfair to the Satanist community.
Yeah, there's no two sides there.
That's true.
And that is true.
This is a safe space.
Very much so. Yes. And it was created as a safe space in 2006. Before that was really, it was a joke at the time, but now Jesus Christ, be safe here.
Yes.
Anyway.
Absolutely. So, well, I feel very safe.
Yes. Let's all hide in the dork forest for just an hour. Forest, you guys.
Yeah. With all the other rangers and clerics.
It'd be perfect. I'm a social justice bard.
Yes.
And but what I would like to know, so if there's no map, and there's no miniatures, you're sitting there essentially telling a story, asking people what their next moves are.
Correct.
And then you're like, well, it's sort of like more like a text video game when I was a kid where you type in, I open the door.
Right.
That's what they say. And then we open the door.
Yes.
And then you see a book. All right. What do you do there? You're like, I close the door and burn the place down.
Sure. Now, in some scenarios, or just in some cases, especially depending on the party you play with. If you play with most people who come from a D&D background, they're going to be a little bit more inclined to want a little bit more of an objective.
They
like,
want to see the. They want to see the scenario.
Right. So I have I've had times where people are like, okay, well, you go into this speakeasy, you know, you go into this little underbelly, you know, bar kind of situation. Yeah, yeah. So sometimes I'd be like, well, what does it look like? So I might take out a piece of paper and be like, well, here's the stool, here's people sitting so it's very makeshift. Like I'm just kind of, you know, making it up as I go kind of thing, at least in terms of the setting, which you totally can.
Yeah.
Cause sometimes, you know, it'll be like, oh, if somebody's like, well, I want to, you know, fight somebody. And that's the thing with don't just openly fight people. Cause remember, you're just regular people, so somebody might pull a gun on you and just kill you. And it has nothing to do with the Cthulhu mythos, but it's just 1930s. There's gangsters. There's all these guys, crooked cops, all this stuff.
Right.
Might just kill you.
And you didn't put enough things into dodge.
Right.
Now, so if you're a librarian,
yes.
Those are good skills to have in a Cthulhu universe.
Absolutely.
If you are, if you are an investigator, you have other like you have ties to the underworld. You can ask around that way, right?
Sure,
that's one of those skills.
Sure,
if you are a sexy lady, you can use your wiles. You got feminine wiles,
right?
And then so everybody's got these different things.
Sure,
but you are in a dangerous world,
right?
What happens when all of those normal people meet a what if they meet the monster? They die
typically.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've had a scenario. So one of the There are.
That's got to be hilarious. You're like, I'm going to spend a lot of time, going to create this character.
Yes.
We're going to play it for 3.5 hours. Yep. I am going to be killed.
Right.
And then I'm going to go get a Cheeto.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes I tell them, like, don't name your characters. You'll get attached. So one of the big Eldritch gods is this character named Azathoth. And there's always complex, weird names for a lot of the gods. Cthulhu's one of the easier ones, I guess. But like,
well, when you learn how to pronounce it, because it's got a C and a TH and a U and an L and a U.
Yep.
And you're like, Cthulhu?
Right.
Where's the E in the, between the C and the TH?
Right.
There isn't one.
But we made it work.
We made it work. That's it.
Yeah. But so Azathoth is kind of the originator of the gods. He's like all the other gods are descended from him. And Azathoth is placed into an intentional unconsciousness.
Okay.
Because apparently if he is conscious, everything else doesn't exist.
Okay.
So that's like the backstory for his character.
Right.
We have a scenario where this guy, he was a thief. He was like a cat burglar.
Okay.
And he steals, of course, the wrong thing.
Uh-oh.
He steals something that opens up this portal.
Right.
Because that's how it works. You know, because diamonds and cash you know, aren't good enough.
Yeah.
I have to steal like a dagger and a piece of paper or something. And I hold them at the same time and I read something aloud.
Right.
And it opens a portal.
That's
because
it.
Of course it does.
Of course it does.
He opens it in his apartment building. The apartment building gets all crazy, but so all these weird things happen.
Property and values fall. There's trouble.
It's terrible. It's a terrible world that I don't recommend living in. So the investigators, I don't remember even really the kind of intro to it, but it ends up with these investigators going into this apartment building and they fight, like the landlady comes out and she's all like crazy and stuff and they fight her off and they make their way into this apartment building. And the guy is there. He's holding this dagger. He's holding the paperwork. He has tried to like kill himself. He's trying to commit suicide because he wants to die because he's like he's the tether of this portal. He can't die.
He can't, because he's holding it open by holding those two items.
Right. So.
So he's trying to cut his own hands off.
Right.
To make it to close it.
Right. But of course he cannot.
He cannot.
So the investigators make their way into his apartment, and I even softball this one into that, you know, for them, because the way it's set up is you go in and there are two closed doors. I had the other one open. It was literally softballing this to the adventurers.
Yeah.
Where the guy's sitting, he's like laying on the ground. He's like, you can tell that he's all messed up. He's trying to die. He's crazy. And they can hear this music coming from the other room because Azathoth is kept in slumber by these like musician
siren-y
things.
Yeah, kind of things.
Things to keep him asleep. So that's the music they hear from this other room.
Mm-hmm.
And they walk in and they're like, okay, we see this guy and we want to open the other door. And I tell them, I'm like, This guy who's holding this, he's pleading with you not to open the door. He is telling you, do not open the door. He is begging you not to.
They are, but your adventurers are like, what's behind that door?
Right. He's like, well, they mentioned the door, so that must matter. That must be important. So they open the door.
What are you, a warforge?
Exactly.
Exactly.
They open the door, and there's Azathoth. They see him, and I'm like, all right, well, roll a check for your sanity to see if you lose sanity. They roll. They fail. They lose D100 sanity. So an average person might have like 30-ish sanity.
Yeah.
They have to roll the percentile dice to go from 1 to 100, and they lose that much sanity for seeing this guy.
Right.
Just because they looked at him.
Instantaneously. Yep.
They all fail. They all go insane. But because of it being Cthulhu, it's like, well, you're insane, but you're not dead.
You're just
insane.
Right.
So they burn down the apartment building because they believe like, okay, well, that's, you know, so they burn down. But because they do that, it kills the guy
and it closes the portal.
So they inadvertently save the world.
Yes.
By killing, like they burn down the building.
And do they burn down themselves with it?
And they burn down themselves with it.
Oh.
And they save the world, but they all go insane. So that is like something that happens. That's why they say like when you build, like you might want to make like two or three characters at the beginning if you're going to play for like multiple sessions.
Right.
Because like you might. You know, you might just
die.
Because
the one character, you might save the world, but you'll die doing it.
Yep.
And now you're done.
Yep.
So I hope you brought a book.
Right.
And
like you go over there and you read. You next time I tell you there's a book over there, don't touch it.
Next time somebody pleads to you not to open the. So if what they could have done is they could have tried to get one of the items out of the guy's hands, or they would have had to have killed him.
They would have had to have killed him. But the thing is that like it was. It's one of the, and this will sometimes happen with the scenarios. It's where my creativity really has to come into play, where it's like, sometimes it's not really super obvious what they're supposed to do.
Okay.
So, and sometimes it'll happen in other role-playing games too. It really is kind of a DM thing where it's mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm trying to put you in the right direction, but it's like, okay, this guy's holding these items in his hands. He's obviously tried to like cut his, he's tried to kill himself with other means.
Right.
So what is he supposed to, like, what are we supposed to do? Mm-hmm. You know, so the fact that they went and opened the door, I mean, and also too, this guy in their eyes is like, this guy might be insane. Like, what's good? Well, like, how can we trust what he's saying?
Right.
You know, so that comes into play too, but it's part of the fun, you know, because the experience of the game is not, and by experience, I mean like the experience, like leveling kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because it's not like D&D, because, you know, if you're a D&D character and you've been leveling and playing a character for that long and then they die, there's a little bit more at stake because you feel you put so much more into it.
You're devastated to some extent. Yeah. Right.
But when you're playing Call of Cthulhu and you're like, I played this, you know, I was an actress and I did the, and then my character died. It's like, okay, well, now I can build this other character. And also, too, there's a lot that has to do with... like a big part of the fun is just the story, the background of your character, the story, all the stuff that goes into it. So sometimes when people die, they're like, oh, well, now I'm excited about like creating the story for someone's character.
Someone who's gone mad.
Right.
Right. Because then you have to figure out, well, they're not dead.
Yeah.
What's the next thing that they do?
Right.
Because they still have a task here. And do they know that they still have a task?
Right. And I've had times too, usually with NPCs where like a group will have NPCs that are with them. Mm-hmm. That is one of the things with Call of Cthulhu too that I always have to be careful with, is that like the players are really inclined to be like, well, let's get the whole town involved. And it's like, well, you can't just bring the whole police force with you. You know, I'm not going to let you do that.
Right.
You know, but also, and that's another thing too, with even if you look at like H.P. Lovecraft stories or mm-hmm. a lot of horror stories in general, is you kind of have to have that, you have to really suspend that disbelief of like, why didn't they just go to the cops? You
know, right. Like, or who walks in alone?
Right. So sometimes it's, you have to kind of, you know, take a little bit of that, there. But so that happens in the role-playing setting too, where they're like, well, we want to bring the police with us. And so for me, it's then I have to come and be like, okay, well, these two cops will go with you.
So you've brought someone to die.
Right, exactly.
Congratulations.
And it usually goes that way.
And that's it. Well,
that's usually the way it goes.
So if someone wants to play Call of Cthulhu, mm-hmm. they just have to buy one book.
Yeah, they can buy there's the player's handbook. There's I think they call it the or I think it's just called the core rule book, where it'll have the information if you want to be. So like in D&D, how you have like the player's guide and you have like the dungeon master's guide.
Yeah.
Cthulhu just has it in one book.
Okay.
And then they have an investigator's guide, which is a little bit more of like what a player's handbook would be. Oh. So I would recommend the core rule book, because then, I mean, it's better to have it and not need it, I guess, you know, so you get all the lore keeper stuff and the stuff to play.
Yeah.
But it gives you like the list of occupations that you can pick, because that's one of the more game mechanic things about the game, is like, here's a list of different occupations. And if you pick those occupations, here are like the skills that you have proficiency in, you know, like stuff like that. And there's a lot of open, There's you know, so much open territory that you can go with. There's a module for Call of Cthulhu that takes place in the Old West. So I had one of my players, she came to me and she said, well, it's not one of the occupations in the book, but can I be like a madam?
Yes.
And I was like, yes, you absolutely can. And it was great because you also roll all of your stats. There's no like point buying system.
Okay.
So it's great because then you can kind of make up the backstory of your character based on your attributes. Like I had a friend who rolled like a high constitution.
Yeah.
He rolled a high size, but a low constitution. So he was really big, but he didn't have a high constitution. So he had like asthma. It's like the way he wrote it. He was like, yeah, I'm like a big guy, but I'm like, I'm not able to like,
I'm not,
you know,
particularly athletic.
Right.
Yes.
But so this,
Dan Telfer.
Yeah. Exactly. So. Yeah. But I had so she did a madam, which I was like, okay, well, you can just, because in the West, like madams were a big part of like Western.
The day to day.
Yeah.
According
economy.
To all the movies.
Yeah. She had a brothel called the Watering Hole. Yeah.
Catchy title.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was great because she rolled a really high size. So she was just this big woman.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, oh yeah, you walk in and there she is holding a guy up by his throat. You know?
Right.
Like, so it's just like, it's just, there's so much, you know, that goes into it. There are other, now I mentioned Chaosium, the Old West one was through Chaosium, but there are other role-playing games that have Cthulhu in it. There's Octung Cthulhu, where
Germany.
It's
kind of Germany.
It's basically the Third Reich is using like Cthulhu mythos to
like
win the war. Right.
Right.
Right. So they have like that is Octon Cthulhu. They have.
Like a Hellboy kind of BPRD kind of.
Yeah. Okay. So it's very much that. And then there's I think it's called like Pop Cthulhu is another. That one's a little bit more like high. I guess not necessarily high fantasy, but more like here's models and here's like you fighting more. Okay. Often. It's a little more action based, which again I like. I appreciate the storytelling side of Call of Cthulhu, which is why I picked that. I'm also not a big history buff, so for me like. I always worry that I'm going to play with people that like they know a lot about history, and so they're going to catch me on something,
right?
You know, especially because you know when you're playing with other nerdy people, you right? Know, sometimes they go on tangents,
and it turns out that dorks we all have access to a lot of information a little information about a lot of different things,
right?
And then there's a couple of things that we've taken a deep sink into,
yes.
That other people have not, but they're like, because I vaguely know what Schrodinger's cat is, right?
Right.
For example,
yeah.
I don't know a lot about it.
Right.
I know a little bit more than I did because I had to do a little research, right. But I was like, I vaguely remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, Brian, we are at an hour.
All right.
This has been great.
You were right. You told me it was going to fly by, and you were absolutely right.
It is true. So it's a Jacobovitz.
Jacobovitz.
Good, yes, for
you
me.
You got it.
Jacobovitz. You just want to hit the cob.
Yeah.
Jacobovitz, and it's Brian Jacobovitz, and it's at Brian Jacobovitz, and you host a show once a month at Paper Heroes,
yes.
And people should follow you on Twitter and Instagram.
Absolutely.
And all the things, and they will know more things about it. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?